Good day, everyone. Welcome to what I believe is episode 5 of James Gordon Song and Rants Man. Today we're talking about poverty and homelessness, and as per usual, I'll be dropping in appropriate songs here and there during the proceedings. And I have a special guest in my studio today, who is Dominika McPherson from the Guelph and Wellington Task Force for Poverty Elimination. Really nice to have you here. And all I need from you, Dominika, really is, these are less than an hour long, so can you solve poverty in less than an hour for me?
I mean, we can try.
Okay, good. I don't know why we didn't think of that before.
Yeah, I know. If only.
Yeah. But maybe I'm familiar with your organization. If you start with a little backgrounder for us, and then I'll start to pepper you with questions.
Sure. Of course. Yeah. So the Guelph and Wellington Task Force for Poverty Elimination, or Poverty Task Force for short, is the poverty elimination strategy for Guelph and Wellington County. And we're a collaborative in the community. So we bring together key players from diverse perspectives to take local action and advocate for system and policy change to address the root causes of poverty. So we really focus upstream, but we're also responsive and take local action when it's needed at a community level. And ultimately, we want to eliminate poverty in Guelph, Wellington.
All right. Now, you said take action in there. Can you describe what does that look like? What kind of actions might we see if we look up the work you're doing?
Yeah. So as I mentioned previously, we do a lot of upstream work, but we also do some downstream work as well. So if we identify that there's a pressing need in our community or a gap, we might do local community-based research to gain an understanding of what those experiences look like, and most importantly, talk to people in the community about what their experiences look like. And then with that information, we can work on identifying solutions, and we can do advocacy along those lines. So we might create opportunities for people to have their voices heard by higher levels of government, to push for policy change. We might reach out to elected officials. We might reach out and work closely with system leaders to shift the way that they are providing services in the community so that it happens more effectively on the ground. So we're kind of in a unique position where we can work with a number of different key players, most importantly, folks that are experiencing the issues firsthand, and leverage things at a system level to make things better and to have a more positive impact at the in the community.
And you say that it's hard trying to make ends meet. Don't talk about hard till you lived on the street. Bitch to me about your 9 to 5, till you spend a day working just to stay alive. Well, there's many more meal times than meals. I tell you right now, you don't know how it feels to be always out there where nobody cares. And there's many more meal times than meals.
For what you just paid for that posh front row seat, I'd be king of the road, I could live for a week. Don't want your pity or your sympathy. How about a few bucks for my buddies and me?
Well, there's many more meal times than meals. I tell you right now, you don't know how it feels to be always out there where nobody cares. And there's many
missions, the shelters, they're full all the time, but I'm empty more often than not. Here on Hardscrabble Road, we get blamed for the crime, but the crime isn't leaving us all here to rot.
When there's many more meal times than meals, I tell you right now, you don't know how it feels to be always out there when nobody cares. Out there where nobody cares, and there's many more meal times than me.
Now, This is hopefully being heard everywhere, although we're both here in Guelph, so you have a local perspective and a local mandate. Can you tell me how the work that happens for you in Guelph, like our story in this city, compared to stories everywhere else?
Yeah, that's a great question. So obviously we're focused on eliminating poverty in Guelph, Wellington, but we know that that's only possible through eliminating poverty elsewhere because the root causes are similar. So the issues that people are experiencing here are being experienced in communities across the country and disproportionately in some more than others. Mm-hmm. But we know that the root causes of poverty is a lack of income, but not just a lack of income. It's because there's an inequitable distribution of wealth in our broader society, and that's perpetuated by policy decisions and decisions made at a system level. And those are decisions made by all levels of government. And those pieces, which are ultimately kind of upheld by, I'm going to go big here, but upheld by systems of oppression and colonization, racism, sexism, and those broader system factors and how they perpetuate barriers for people who are living with low incomes to be able to access employment, exit poverty, be able to feed themselves and their families. And those root causes are systemic and ones that impact people, not just in our community, but in all other communities as well.
Well, it wasn't made for you.
Wasn't made for you.
It wasn't made for me.
Wasn't made for me.
It was made for who?
Made for who?
Is at the top of the heap. Well, now listen to me.
Listen.
When I say the system isn't broken, it was made that way. The system isn't broken, it was made that way. Well, now it isn't fair.
Isn't fair.
It's not supposed to be.
Not supposed to be.
'Cause they don't care.
They don't care.
And can't you see? Well, now listen to me.
Listen.
When I say the system isn't broken, it was made that way. The system isn't broken, it was made that way. Social fabric has been torn. It was ripped right from the start. From that sorry day that you were born. It was meant to keep us and them apart. System isn't wrecked.
Isn't wrecked.
'Cause it was meant.
It was meant.
To protect.
To protect.
The 1%. Well, now listen to me.
Listen.
When I say the system isn't broken, it was made that way. The system isn't broken, it was made that way.
System isn't broken.
Made that way. The system isn't broken, it was made that way. Well, it was built to last.
Built to last.
By the upper class.
By the upper class.
Built on greed.
Built on greed.
Not democracy.
Not democracy.
It wasn't made for you.
Wasn't made for you.
And it wasn't made for me.
Wasn't made for me.
It wasn't made for you.
Wasn't made.
It wasn't even made for me.
It wasn't made for me.
It wasn't, it wasn't, it wasn't, it wasn't, it wasn't made.
It wasn't made.
It wasn't made.
It wasn't made.
It wasn't made for you.
It wasn't made for me.
It wasn't, it wasn't, it wasn't, it wasn't, it wasn't made for you.
in my role that only has 5 days to go as a city councilor, we interacted a lot as to, okay, what can be done at a municipal level. How much of your gig is actually just juggling all those strange government levels, and some of which look like they're earnestly trying and some of them are earnestly avoiding, right, the issues?
Yeah, I mean, it's complex work, but sometimes it's also simple. So when we look at the biggest thing that can make a difference for folks living in poverty is more income in people's pockets to be able to get by, pay their rent, pay for food, and meet their basic needs and not just survive but thrive. There's measures that can be taken at all levels of government to improve someone's income situation. So a lot of it is navigating those different levels and identifying what levers exist in policy environments or program environments at the municipal level, provincial and federal level. But there are mechanisms at all of them to make a difference and to make an impact. And although you may have different approaches from different governments, you know, all governments make good decisions and all governments make bad decisions. It really, and I think it can be that simple. And I think it's partly our role as advocates and people doing organizing at a community level to amplify the responsibilities that those respective governments have so that they can assume responsibility around levers for action to improve people's lives in their communities.
So that actually leads me to a question that you've just described the work at government level. People listening to this anywhere, I think it's important to know what we need to do societally, not from a government level, both with our attitude and our approach to address these issues. Like, what can Joe or Josephine listener, how can they be effective in being advocates too?
Yeah, I think one of the kind of biggest challenges that exist on a broader kind of societal context is the stigma and discrimination that folks living with poverty experience on a daily basis. And we know that poverty is disproportionately experienced by folks who are experiencing different forms of oppression. So we know Indigenous folks, Black people, people of color, people with disabilities, women, and a number of different groups that face marginalization, it's disproportionate. So discrimination plays a huge factor in that. So if someone's facing racism when they go to a job interview, they may be the most skilled and effective candidate. But if racism is a factor, they may not be able to access that job. So I think part of it is understanding some of the challenges folks face. There's really strong narratives that you may not be facing that kind of income struggle if you just pulled up your bootstraps and worked harder. You know, you might not be on social assistance, so Ontario Works or the Ontario Disability Program, if you just weren't so lazy. And we know that those narratives are not only really persistent, but they're also incredibly harmful and frankly completely untrue. We know that those perceptions of people being fraudulent or things like that perpetuate these kinds of barriers that folks face to exit their situation. And I think as a community, and I think this is the case in other communities as well, but I think we're really welcoming and we care about one another. But I think part of supporting that care is busting those myths about poverty-related experiences. And when we bust those myths, we diminish the fear that people have. So we've experienced, you know, people might be familiar with Not in My Backyard, this kind of sentiment that if you have affordable housing projects or community programs being co-located where you live that are meeting the needs of folks facing marginalized experiences or living with poverty, the fear that people have and how that can often play out in forms of hatred and can be discrimination. And I think a lot of that's perpetuated by these, you know, untruths that persist in our society. And when you think that that's the case, you can be worried about someone using substances because those perspectives are so dominant. So I think as a community, we can show a lot more care and compassion. We can bust those myths about the challenges folks face. For example, if you're struggling with mental illness, but the wait list to access mental health care is incredibly long, or the medication you need to access, we don't have pharmacare in our country, you can't afford it. I think when we start to help people understand the barriers folks are are facing, and we start to have those conversations with our neighbors, have those conversations at the dinner table, have those conversations with our coworker over coffee, that's when we can start to build a more caring and compassionate community. Because I think people at their core are caring.
So maybe
we need
this
to challenge those perspectives.
One of the challenges you've posed, maybe you could tell us more about it, is your YIMBY campaign. Do you want to?
Yeah. So we locally identified a really desperate need for deeply affordable housing. So affordable housing that people can access on incomes from things like social assistance. So for folks who may not know, if you're a single adult on Ontario Works, you receive a maximum of $733 a month for all your basic needs. With around half of that meant to go towards your housing. And for anybody that has a sense of rental costs, they know that that incredibly far outpaces $300-some a month. So with that, we've had some traction in our community, some action around creating deeply affordable housing projects and supportive housing projects for folks facing complex health needs. In response to that, we saw how dominant some of those fear-based myths were, and we realized we needed to support a more caring and compassionate education campaign for folks, and also bring attention to, housing as a human right, and that discriminatory perspectives about people is against human rights code and law in this province, and really amplify that we live in a caring community, and that means that everybody has a place to call home that meets their needs. Just like when I went and rented an apartment, I didn't feel like I needed to ask permission of my neighbors to move in.
Right.
I felt like, oh, this is a great place to live, and just because of someone's income situation or the health issues that they're experiencing doesn't mean that they should then have to ask permission when no one else needs to.
Right.
And I think the other thing as well, as part of the YIMBY campaign, is drawing attention to the fact that, regardless of the contents you're facing, many people want the same thing from where they live. Everybody wants to live in a safe, supportive place. They want to live in a neighborhood that has services that meet their needs. Nobody wants to travel far for the grocery store. And I think we have a lot more in common than we don't. And I think sometimes those negative perceptions that aren't based in truths can create division. And it's in that division that we lose ourselves as caring human beings. And I think that's really what that campaign's about.
Yeah.
And the one other thing I'd maybe just highlight too, it's also about identifying what are like legitimate concerns about housing developments, right? There's also some important things to be concerned about from a planning standpoint or things along those lines, but how do we engage in those conversations in respectful ways and make sure that we're drawing a line at what's discriminatory and what's not?
Right.
Freight train rolling through a restless town. Whistle blows, that's a lonesome sound. Too short and along as the sun goes down. All along the Great Divide. On the east side when the shadows are long, it's like you're living inside a Tom Waits song. An American dream that's gone all wrong. All along the Great Divide. It's not just the tracks that split this town. It's a system built to keep you down. If you don't have the money and your skin is brown, then slavery's a lie all along the Great Divide. On the west side, everything's pretty and green, like the cover of a high-toned magazine. Safe behind their gates, not a soul to be seen, all along the Great Divide. On the east side, you can get shot in the back for the crime of walking down the street while black. And that train keeps rolling, clickety-clack, all along the Great Divide. It's not just the tracks that split this town. It's a system built to keep you down. If you don't have the money and your skin is brown, then slavery's a lie all along the great divide. Oh, it's a ghost train ride. The wound is old. A system built to keep you down. If you don't have the money and your skin is brown, then slavery's alive all along the great divide. All along the great divide.
As a counselor, I would always get that classic NIMBY line, well, I don't want those people in my neighborhood. And what they often mean, they have a picture in their head of violent axe murderers and totally out of control drug addicts. And yet, we also learn that you and I, almost all of us are really just two paychecks from being homeless. So it doesn't look like that stereotype. How bad is it out there, other than what we see, the poor folks that end up on the street downtown often get pegged as that stereotype. Okay, that's what poverty looks like. But what does it really look like?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And I think it's important to recognize that everybody's experience with these issues is unique and can look different. But at the same time, I think people forget that, you know, these are human beings,
right,
that we're talking about. These are people who are worthy of dignity and are our neighbors. They're also friends. They're, you know, children of someone. They have families. They
names.
Have people that love them and care about them.
Right.
And I think that's an important thing to remember. And then I think the other important thing to remember, too, is there are many people struggling in our community that people don't even may not know about. It could be your neighbor. You know, it could be someone in your family. It could be your coworker. And I think to your point around so many people are just one paycheck away, mm-hmm. So many people are one unexpected injury away, one illness away. And I think when those situations happen, it really brings things into perspective to people on how easy it can be to fall into really precarious positions. And I think there's lots of people who, you know, have huge credit card and debt situations, you know, and that could be your neighbor who, to send their kids to school with a lunch, themselves are going without food. So I think it's important to remember, too, that poverty can look lots of different ways. And I think when we make assumptions about what poverty looks like, we miss out on this opportunity to recognize how many people are struggling how many people we know are struggling, and it also perpetuates strong feelings of shame that people have. We make it very shameful because we have these strong narratives of it being someone's fault,
right,
or decisions that they've made that were irresponsible. But we actually know that our system marginalized people. Our system creates strong barriers for people. And frankly, if we're looking at, you know, some folks who are facing some of the most significant experiences of poverty are often dependent on social assistance. And social assistance is so woefully inadequate that it keeps people in a really toxic cycle of poverty and makes it nearly impossible to exit. Because, you know, if you're getting just that $733 a month to cover all of your basic needs, how are you going to afford, internet access to apply for a job? How are you going to afford to print your resume? How are you going to afford to have an outfit to show up to an interview? How are you going to afford the transportation to get to the interview? How are you going to afford the regular phone bill that needs to be on a phone that needs to be regular charged to get the call back? Like, I think we forget when we're in stable income situations, we take for granted some of those really basic things. And I actually think the broader context right now in the pandemic and with inflation and the pressures that are being experienced by so many people now, it's creating a greater sense of how much people are struggling. And I'm hopeful that it also creates some space for some broader compassion for folks who were facing so many more barriers even before the pandemic came.
Mm-hmm. We make our own stories of what that demographic is. And we also make our own judgments awfully quickly about here's the way you should be living your life. This is when the Poverty Task Force was just getting started. The very first meeting that I attended, like a public engagement meeting, a young woman living in poverty got attacked at the meeting because somebody stood up and looked at her and they said, "You look like you have a fancy new haircut. How much did that cost?" And she said, "Well, $75. And they said, "Oh, okay, so that's how you're deciding to spend your limited income on?" And yet, going back to something you said before, she had aspirations to fit in, to get a job. She needed to look good for it. And yet the room turned on her, thinking, "Oh no, you didn't spend it on food, so there's something wrong with you."
When the plant closed down, they shipped it all to Mexico. It left a big hole in this town, and I fell in pretty deep, you know. I landed on the street, I landed pretty rough. To get back on my feet, it was a long way up. When you live out on the sidewalk, sometimes you fall between the cracks. On this rocky road that I walk, sometimes there's no turning back. I used to go to interviews when I had the bus fare. Now what am I supposed to do when these are all the clothes I have to wear? And if somehow I got hired, how would they call to let me know? I get so cold, I get so tired, I got nowhere to go. When you live out on the sidewalk, sometimes you fall between the cracks. On this rocky road that I walk, sometimes there's no turning back. Guy says, "Take a number and take your place in line." The number says 100, but I got nothing but time. I got a sister in the Sioux, says I could stay there till the spring comes. I dream that I could make it through, maybe come back and land a big one.
cracks on this rocky road that I walk. Sometimes there's no turning back. When you live on the sidewalk, sometimes you fall between the cracks on this rocky road that I walk. Sometimes there's no turning back.
So at the municipal government level, when we're looking for solutions for homelessness and poverty, we often hear that we just don't have the money for it, for what we need. However, I've heard statistics that suggest that finding adequate housing for someone can be less expensive than the cost of keeping them with the services they need to stay on the street. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, no, it is. I would always say it's cost effective to support people to be well.
Yeah.
Right? It is. When we look at the dollar values and, you know, when you break down the financial considerations of housing someone versus paying for emergency shelter, healthcare costs, emergency responses, we know that people living on low incomes with low incomes are disproportionately criminalized in our society. When you look at the costs that go into not addressing the root causes of someone's issues, but managing the crisis that people are experiencing, it's far more costly than supporting someone to have a place to call home and to have housing. And that's even in a context where our housing crisis is so considerable due to the lack of regulation that we have around our policy around housing.
We're launching this episode close to the Christmas season. Here's Christmas Down by the River, inspired by a homeless encampment at the edge of Guelph. It was busted up, of course, with nowhere for the residents to go.
Tie down that tarp a little tighter for the coming storm. Freezing rain feels sharp. Christ, where's the lighter? We could never keep things warm. When that wood's too green to burn anyway, it just fills our lungs with smoke. December's a mean month, they say. If it wasn't so sad, it would be a joke. The bylaw man, you can tell that he's tried to cut us a little slack. He's done what he can, he can see both sides, but he'll bring the cops when he comes back. Our star of wonder is that chemical factory light. Our angel choirs, our sirens crying in the night. When the train hits the crossing, that's our jingle bells. The cold winds howl and joyless Noels. It's Christmas down by the river, down by the river. Down at St. Paul's, they're giving out socks. They put on a decent dinner. You get a bed in the hall if you listen to their talks. They make you feel like you're a sinner. Jake here has a cough that would rattle the windows if we had any. Take his damp sleeping bag off. He shivers in his thin clothes. He doesn't have a prayer or a penny. Why do we live here? People ask me. Well, I could ask them the same. It's not very clear the line in between. Who's giving? We're taking the blame. Our star of wonder is the chemical factory light. Our angel choirs, our sirens crying in the night. When the train hits the crossing, that's our jingle bells. And the cold wind is howling joyless Noels. It's Christmas down by the river. Our star of wonder is the chemical factory light. Our angel choirs, our sirens crying in the night. When the train hits the crossing, that's our jingle bells. And the cold winds howl and joyless Noels. It's Christmas down by the river, down by the river.
Well, you've already made a start at this, but what's your priority list for addressing that? Like, what can we actually do so that people feel more well and they're housed? How do we do it?
My list is very long.
Yeah.
and it includes an action plan for the federal government, provincial and municipal government, and everybody else involved. Yeah, it's a tough one. I mean, when I look at the complexity folks are facing, and again, everybody's facing different experiences with that either, right? I think that's the other thing. When we forget that people are human beings with names and yeah. with friends and family, we also get into that dangerous territory of assuming everybody's in the same situation and making these kind of wide sweeping statements. We need to remember that these are neighbors mm-hmm. in our community. I think some of the solutions, though, I think there's some really amazing service providers and system leaders, and also people doing grassroots supports programs in our community in really caring ways that are doing the best that they can. But we also know that we need solutions because we can't just be doing Band-Aids consistently. Mm-hmm. There's been some strong advocacy to the province. We need more resourcing and funding. Taking action on these issues is not impossible. I think people often feel like these issues are too big or too challenging, and it's easier to move people or it's easier to get angry about it than it is to solve it, because it feels so complex and so big. But the reality is that solving these problems is possible, and it's a matter of will. Budgets are about priorities. And if we acknowledge the cost effectiveness of keeping people well, it's much easier to justify, you know, the efficient use of public taxpayer dollars to solve right. these issues. And right. that means society. So when a person living on low incomes can, if they're able to access employment, or if they're not able to access employment for a number of warranted reasons, maybe they have a disability that prevents them from being able to do so, when they have more adequate income in their pockets, we know that what they do is spend it in the local economy on meeting their basic needs.
I'm hopeful for one reason right here in the city of Guelph, because you're doing the job you're doing. grateful for that, but how can we help you in the work that we do? How can our listeners help you in the work that you're doing?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I think I want people to engage in these issues in a way that works for them, but it can be as simple as you know, calling your elected official and your elected representatives and telling them that you want action on poverty issues, that you want action on affordable housing, that you support a basic income, increasing social assistance rates. So amplifying advocacy calls, and you don't need to be an expert in those issues. They are the ones that are supposed to be an expert in the policy. So even if you just call saying you support those things, that in itself is impactful. On a more kind of emergency response downstream approach, there's lots of amazing organizations and agencies in our community that are always looking for volunteers, donations, and support on the ground. And I think from a poverty task force standpoint, I would love people to sign up as a Yes in My Backyard champion as right. part of our YIMBY campaign. They can always sign up for our newsletter and get involved in the work of the poverty task force by visiting our website at www.gwpoverty.ca.
Nice.
But I think in general, I also think to not undervalue the significance of those conversations at the dinner table or with your neighbor or over the coffee at work.
Right.
Have those conversations. Those in themselves is where we start to break down those divisions that aren't based in fact, and we build a more caring and compassionate community and society. So, yeah, keep having those conversations. No action's too big or too small. But if you have the ability to do it, get involved in organizing on these issues, because we need movement building and we need more civic engagement in general.
Thank you. Very inspiring. I learned a lot, and I hope those listening get some ideas on how they can participate too. So thank you, Dominika.
Thank you so much, James.
How can you rest, you merry gentlemen? How can you not be dismayed by the number of poor souls who are so cold on Christmas Day? Jesus was born in a manger. Yes, he was homeless too. You'd think in 2,000 years since then we'd learn what we should do. Maybe where you've decked your halls, everything's all right. All is calm and all is bright. But in the dark where the flocks are no longer watched, and we're all kept out of sight, we don't sleep in heavenly peace. There is no silent night. There is no silent night. Well, we are your neighbor's children that you have seen before. Since your goodwill's only towards some men, the rest beg at your door. Though the snow is all about, that's the only thing that's even. All too few of us can share on the feast of Stephen. Maybe where you've decked your halls, everything's all right. All is calm and all is bright. But in the dark where the flocks are no longer watched, and we're all kept out of sight, we don't sleep. Heavenly peace, there is no silent night. There is no silent night. Well, tonight there are glad tidings for those of wealth and rank possessing. Where is the star, I wonder, for those who don't have their blessing? Jesus, little Lord Jesus, the winter winds blow stronger. These dark December nights are still getting longer. How can you rest, you merry gentlemen? How can you not be dismayed by the number of poor souls who are so cold on Christmas Day?
One of the songs you may have noticed was not sung by me. Many More Meal Times Than Meals was part of an entire folk opera I wrote about the very issues we're talking about here. It was called Hardscrabble Road, and one of these days I'll revive it. You heard the original cast, Ken Brown, Noni Kreet, Ryan Laird, Amy Nodwell, and Sandy Horn, lending their voices. Thanks for listening. All the commentary and all the songs were written by me, performed by me, with the help of some of the best musicians a feller could ever ask for. This is a new venture for me. I'd like to hear your comments and suggestions for future topics to explore with this combo of music and commentary. It's tough out there these days. If you have found value in what I've offered, I'd be grateful if you'd consider supporting the work I do with an e-transfer or PayPal contribution to james@jamesgordon.ca. That's how you can contact me too, and I'd love to hear from you. Please visit jamesgordon.ca, my website, for info about how to purchase my albums and books. See you next time around on James Gordon, Song and Rants Man.